Welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I'm Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, where we specialise in succession law, civil disputes and litigation in Queensland. If you want to safeguard your assets, navigate estate planning with confidence, or resolve legal conflicts effectively, you're in the right place. Join me each week as we break down complex legal issues into clear, practical insights, helping you protect your legacy and find solutions with certainty. So let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to the Vicar Law Podcast. I am your host, Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law. And today, well, we welcome you to the month of May, which is an exciting month for the Vicar Law Podcast because we are talking about estate disputes. Now, lots of people contact me or talk to me about kind of estate disputes. You know, everyone's heard a crazy story, maybe you have thought about in the future whether you might need to take some steps to challenge or contest a will. It's kind of a hot topic and something that people always talk about and a lot of the time ends up in court. A dispute in terms of an estate dispute is very much like litigation in the sense that you have to go through the steps, and as I've discussed, you know, previously about litigation and commercial litigation in the podcast, is that it's difficult to know what the other party's going to do, and that's the biggest variable in terms of costs and time. So today, I wanted to start by talking about the difference between challenging a will and contesting a will, because they are two different things. I'll start first with challenging a will because it kind of goes in order a little bit more, I guess. So in terms of challenging a will, it is when you are saying that that will has a problem for a reason. Now, the most common reasons are that the person making the will did not have capacity to do so and undue influence. There are a couple of others, but those are the main ones. Now, capacity is a really big one, because you need to have testamentary capacity in order to prepare your will. Now, the courts have found that the qualities necessary to possess capacity to make a will are around having a sound mind, memory, and understanding. The person needs to understand the nature of making a will and its effects, understand the extent of the property that they are disposing of in their will, and comprehend and appreciate the claims that may arise in terms of making their will. When I prepare a will for somebody, capacity is kind of a twofold thing. So if I have concerns about capacity, the first thing I'll do is I'll get a letter from a doctor who can assess medical capacity. In this day and age of GPs not being readily available, sometimes that actually can be difficult if the person has not had a regular GP for whatever reason. It gets a little bit easier if they've had, you know, the same family doctor for years and years, and they can really give a good testament to the person's capacity because they've known them for a long time and they are aware of any decline. But sometimes I do find it is difficult where you don't have a consistent GP. To get that letter of capacity. I will also say that in terms of the capacity, in terms of doctors, I guess this sounds slightly ageist, but I usually only get them in where a client is kind of aging, mature, very mature, let's call it mature, and also whether they have been diagnosed with an illness which affects their capacity to mind. So potentially early onset dementia would be a reason. So when we look at capacity, the doctor's certificate or a doctor's report is a good way to assess whether someone has capacity or not. The other thing I have to do as a solicitor is for myself decide. Now, there are guidelines out there for solicitors, but generally there's no set test. There's no one case that has defined a test. It's really about the practitioner meeting with the person and deciding whether they have that sound mind. And for me, the things I'm looking for is really an understanding of the nature of the will, understanding the property that they have, and understanding the risks associated sometimes with the way that they are distributing their estate under their will. Now, of course, as a practitioner, you know, red flags, I'll always get red flags where there may be unequal provision. And so it does really take me a lot to get into the understanding of the risks to make sure that that person has the necessary capacity to make the decision. To be honest, what I find with people, particularly people that are older, they, for whatever reason, I mean, I'm Italian, so for us, it's really about Catholic guilt. Let's be honest. For whatever reason, lots of people think about their death, okay, and what happens after they die. So I do find where there is unequal provision in a will, people do come to me with those ideas already set, and it's about me educating about the risks. But it all goes into a conversation about capacity that I have with people. And then I guess that also goes to undue influence, which is often raised when challenging a will. So that's where you have been unduly influenced by someone in making a decision. Really common case is, you know, husband standing over the wife, making her sign a mortgage, okay, or making her sign a witness statement, which is incorrect. That's like the classic cases. In terms of will making, it's about the beneficiary who is getting a greater share exercising undue influence over the testator as to the distribution under the will. To be honest, undue influence can be really hard to prove, and it often comes up in circumstances where you have one child that has significantly cared for that older person. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say that they might not be that older, but has taken a lot of the time in terms of caring for that parent, and therefore the parent has rewarded them, quotation marks, with a greater share in the will, and quite often it comes up as an undue influence kind of challenge. I spoke to a client about this recently, and they agreed that, you know, when you're a full-time carer of somebody that is unwell or quite elderly, it is very common for them to talk about them dying, their will, what's in their will. And I don't think those are unusual conversations. And can they amount to undue influence? Maybe, maybe not. It's actually quite hard to prove unless you have something that's a little bit more concrete. So that's really challenging the will. Now, you would be challenging the will by filing a caveat before or after probate has been filed. You need to take that step in order to prevent probate of that will. And remembering, if you listen to my April podcast, that probate is certification from the court that that will is the valid will that the executors can administer. And then we'll move on to contesting. So contesting is where you say that the will is valid, but there is a reason that the provision in the will is incorrect. And usually this is by way of a family provision application. So spouses and children have an unconditional right to contest a will. That is in the Succession Act. You have that ability. What you need to show is that you haven't been adequately provided for and reasons why you should receive more. Clients will often come to me and say, oh, well, if I give them 10%, you know, how much will the court give them? And it is such a hard question. You literally will not know until you are fronting up in front of court, because there are a lot of factors to consider. One of the biggest ones is the need of that person. So if they have, for example, a disability, a court may be inclined, maybe, and this is completely dependent on the circumstances, to give them a greater share than what was allocated in the will. You have to make a family provision application, so you could contest the will within 6 months of death, so you have to give notice, and then 9 months you have to file after death. I find family provision applications a difficult concept, you know, and the more I talk to people about it, it's funny because on one hand, I feel like a person should have the right to decide the distribution of their estate. You know, the ability for somebody to come and challenge that is difficult. But at the same time, a lot of people don't update their wills or don't get proper legal advice to account for the most important people in their life. And is it fair that once they've died, that person, so for example, let's say a de facto spouse, hasn't been accounted for in that will when they may be in, you know, a relationship for quite a period of time? And so I see kind of both ends, but what I know about both ends is that it is expensive. You know, an estate has to be worth it in order, I think, to really contest the will. So that is a flavor flave for you about challenging versus contesting. Obviously, and I probably should have said this at the beginning, these only apply if you've made a will. If you die without a will, which is dying intestate, your estate is distributed in accordance with the laws of intestacy as per the Succession Act. There's no ability to contest or challenge anything because you have just left that choice really to the state as to the distribution. So it's really about when you have a will. So I hope that gave you a good kind of starting flavor for estate disputes. Next week, we're going to talk about family provision applications in Queensland a little bit further, get a bit more in depth to the nitty gritty, maybe talk about some cases that I have read. And then later in the month, we're going to kind of talk about what happens if an executor's gone rogue and also what to do if you're an executor and you have conflicts amongst beneficiaries, or maybe you are a beneficiary and you're having conflicts amongst beneficiaries. So estate disputes are really wide. It's not just about the will. It can involve other things. And I am looking forward to touching on that with you this month. So thank you again for listening. Please like, share my podcast. I should also apologize for my voice. I went to a conference last week and it is struggling to come back after all the chit chat. So thank you for listening and I will speak to you next week. See you later. That's a wrap for this episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I hope you found today's insights helpful in navigating your legal journey. If you're ready to take the next step in securing your legacy or finally dealing with your dispute, visit www.vicarlaw.com.au to book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. You can also subscribe to our newsletter or find out more about today's topic. Your future begins now and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Until next time, I'm Lydia Vicar, signing off. The Vicar Podcast comprises general information and does not serve as a substitute for professional advice. Prior to making any legal decisions, individuals are advised to seek independent professional guidance and assess the suitability of this information for their own individual goals and objectives.